You're listening to a podcast from 702.
We kick off this hour by chatting to the ANC's Treasurer General, Paul Mashatile, and this is on the back of the ANC-NEC statement that had been delivered. And the President, President Cyril Ramaphosa, President of the ANC in that capacity, reads that statement. But it is, of course, a statement that is crafted collectively by the leadership of the African National Congress on the occasion of its bash that it had, its birthday bash in Kimberley over the past weekend. And that's a very important document. Its purpose is, at least in theory, that it gives you and me as citizens an understanding of what the governing party, the ANC, has in mind. That it wishes should be fed into state processes in terms of a program of action to hopefully improve our lots in terms of the lives that we lead. The question is, of course, whether that statement is one that you find compelling and whether it is a statement that can hopefully set the basis for a better 2020 compared to the last year, because my goodness, we're not short of problems that we need to crack as a country if we look at the economic indices and the state of the state. Paul, good morning to you, sir, and thank you so much for agreeing on a Monday morning, which I know is a busy time for all of you at Luthuli House, to be on the show for the next half an hour. So I really appreciate it. Welcome to 702.
Good morning, sir.
How do you feel about the state of the ANC in terms of divisions? From where I'm sitting and the average Joe, it looks like the ANC is at this time deeply divided. What do you say to many people who hold that particular viewpoint?
The ANC is not deeply divided. You'll recall that when we came from conference in 2017, there was concern that the contestations were quite intense. And therefore, that may lead to, you know, the ANC really breaking down. But we resolved that because we focus on unity, and we make sure that from the top, the leaders work together. And when we came to this January 8th statement, the NEC emphasized that let's continue with the program of unity. You'll see that our theme for this year is unity, social, economic renewal, and nation building. Mm. We think that unity is very important, even beyond just the ANC. But unity must make us focus on issues of socio-economic development. It must not just be internally focused that we want to keep the party strong, we are together, but it must lead to action, unity in action. Address the challenges that people are facing. And more importantly, we want the nation to be united. That's why we're bringing back the theme of nation building. The ANC must show that it's committed to non-racialism. It wants to build this South African nation. And you will see that a lot of our action this year is going to be built around this theme. Where we get our branches to work with communities, our comrades to work together, but deal with issues that will allow us to grow this economy, create employment particularly for young people, change the face of South Africa, so to speak.
But lofty ideals, I mean, you're a numbers person, lofty ideals like nation building and unity and renewal and socioeconomic renewal specifically, and all of those wonderful, wonderful themes around which one might want to craft a presidential speech or a speech that people can take and as South Africans galvanize across our differences. Those things only mean something to us tangibly if the economy is in a better shape, if people are working and therefore have dignity, because for better or worse, we live in a world in which your dignity depends on whether you have a job. And when we look at the state of the South African economy, we look at the growth forecast for this year, 0.9% from the World Bank. Even our own ones are dismal. We don't have an economy growing at levels that are conducive to breaking the back of poverty, inequality, and high levels of unemployment. Isn't the fact of the matter that we can kiss goodbye any talk of unity, nation building and all those lofty things for as long as we continue to have an economy that is has been brought to its knees.
No, I agree fully with you that, you know, socio-economic development means exactly that. It means we need to make sure that we address all the issues that make it difficult for the economy to grow. One of them is the energy sector. We need to get the energy sector right. We must make sure that we fix SOEs, especially the likes of Eskom. But we must make sure that we now begin to bring in other elements of energy, gas, solar, wind, and others. Because if your energy sector is not reliable, we continue to have load shedding. Firstly, nobody wants to invest in such an environment. But you also kill the production that is already there, because then your mining industries that are already here and the smelters, some of them will begin to slow down production because at particular times of the day there isn't enough energy. So you would have heard that the president paid a lot of attention on this matter. We have to get Eskom right, but we need to look at other alternatives. We can't just rely on getting Eskom right. But there are power stations that can be retrofitted if you bring in the private sector to assist with some of them, because government alone doesn't have all the resources. So get those things right, and also make sure that we lower the cost of doing business so that investors can come in, domestic investors can invest. We have already sorted out the issue of visas with many countries. So already there are a number of issues that are being addressed to make sure that indeed we change the situation with respect to the economy. If we grow below 0.9%, as the World Bank is saying, it means we're going to be in problems.
Yeah, and I want to come back to that in a second.
We can change it, Alan.
Yeah, I want to come back to that in a second, and I agree with you. I want to stay on Eskom. You've opened up Eskom. Eskom is arguably our single biggest political economy challenge for this year. And if we don't get that right, everything else in the big picture is going to be in trouble. I want to ask your opinion on this question. Should Eskom be looked after in the Department of Energy or stay with public enterprises?
Ideally, my view is that it should be with energy.
And what's the logic?
Because then you have consistency in terms of policy and implementation. Now, that's the view I've held for long. We found this arrangement being there for many years where Eskom is with public enterprises. But you see, you have a Minister of Energy whose responsibility is to ensure to sort out energy policy implementation, but you have another big institution that doesn't sit with that ministry. I think in the long run, it's creating problems. It's something you can't change immediately, but I think that's the direction we must move towards.
Can we just stay on that for a minute or two, because time's going to run out, and I want to touch on other issues, but one can't underestimate how important the Eskom conversation is. If you look at how the crisis is being managed, right? So there's two conversations around Eskom, and we don't have time for them today. One is the immediate management of the load shedding, and then there's a medium to long-term question of energy insecurity and how we become more energy secure. Even at a high level, Paul, can you articulate for me just intuitively why shifting Eskom from DPE to energy will increase the odds of us actually dealing with the Eskom crisis? Why will where it sits make a difference?
As I said, consistency of policy and implementation. Of course, the mere shift itself won't resolve the immediate problems. The immediate problems, Eskom needs more revenue. It needs to manage its operation. For instance, I don't think we should have load shedding because some conveyor belt has snipped. It means maintenance is not being attended to. Somebody is not paying attention on their job. So there are things that needs to be addressed. And I agree with you that you won't resolve these problems because you are shifting. But long term, when you shift, you have consistency of policy and implementation. So it's something that we must work towards. But the immediate one, as you said, we said maybe you need a company that just focuses on generation. Then you need another one focusing on transmission and another one focusing on distribution, which will work with municipalities. That work is happening. But you need to make sure that the current power stations that exist are properly maintained, because that's what caused load shedding when suddenly some power station is out of operation because of some problems with it. Those who are running Eskom now should have a schedule, a program of looking at power station, which one must be maintained where, which one must be closed at which period to be fixed. And those things must happen properly. There's no excuse to tell the nation that the coal is wet, therefore we have load shedding because we can't deal with coal. Shouldn't we know that there are going to be rains? Why didn't we make sure that a lot of this coal is covered? So I'm saying those things are not part of being resolved by shifting. They must be resolved now. But I'm convinced, so that in the long run, we need to make sure that we align policy departments with implementation. Otherwise, we have challenges, because the Minister of Energy might think this is a priority, and then the Minister of Public Enterprise might think something else. Then,
but that will only be the case, right? And we can leave it after the next question. Your response to this question. The incoherence that you are alluding to will only be the case if two cabinet ministers don't work together. But isn't the whole point of A, collective cabinet responsibility, and B, an economic cluster, that ministers that serve under the behest of President Cyril Ramaphosa ought to be capable of picking up the phone and having a conversation, or better yet, sitting together in each other's offices or wherever they meet and have those conversations? So when we are hypothesizing the incoherence that you are talking about, that is only true if you have people who don't speak to each other and don't work with each other. But the whole point of a cluster is precisely that you can cut across coherence, because some of these strategic and operational duties are necessarily interministerial.
Yes, of course, you're quite right that that would help if people work together. But the problem is that we must never build institutions on basis of relationships. When you build institutions, you must make sure that they're able to stand alone for years to come. Whether you have people who like each other or can work together, it shouldn't be an issue. Because when you build institutions, over time they assume a life of their own. So you would have, even if you have ministers who like each other and then they call each other every day, but you have lots of people in Eskom who think, you know what, we have nothing to do with energy. They can't tell us. You must build an institution that people must know this is how this institution will live and survive well beyond who the minister is.
19 minutes after 10, if you've just tuned in, I just want to take a small little break. I agree with you, Paul. The institutions are more important than temporary personality relations. It's 19 minutes after 10 o'clock.
Eusebius MacKaiser.
Eusebius MacKaiser.
On 702.
Any re-engineering one does in terms of where you house this or that entity, all of that is premised on a capable state and having men and women that are capable of delivering on whatever good theoretical design you have of your state edifice overall. But you guys can't even guarantee that your staff members get paid, so why should we entrust you with executing that duty? Will staff members be paid, and what's gone wrong there? I mean, it's really difficult to take the ANC in government seriously with such big questions like energy and security if Carl Niehaus doesn't know whether he can have a 60th birthday bash.
We like to make sure that our people are taken care of. And I particularly make sure, right since I came in as the TG, that that is the case, that people are paid. But I think what people blew out of context was that because we pay people on the 25th, and this year the 25th, I mean, all Of course, the 25th was going to be Christmas because it is Christmas on the 25th if it's December. And the general manager then said, can you try and pay them before? And that was really the issue, that we were not able to sort out our resources to be able to do it before. But as soon as the holiday was passed, we paid them.
Yeah, but why couldn't you sort out your resources? Tell me that sentence. I mean, that's like not being able to run a spaza shop, but then asking for permission to run the country.
No, ANC is not a spaza shop. It's the biggest liberation movement in the continent. When we talk about paying salaries in the ANC, we're not talking about 100,000 rand.
Yeah, but Paul, you missed the analogy. The point is that if you can't run Luthuli House, why should you run the country?
We can run Luthuli House, and we've been running.
But then why are you not paying your staff on time? Why do you have a payroll problem?
We paid them. How many companies paid their people before December?
Did you pay them in time? Why are they anxious?
The 25th is time, but it was a holiday.
Yes, and you were shocked by the holiday?
As soon as the holiday passed, we paid them on the 27th. 25th and the 26th, it's a holiday. So it's not. There's no problem that we can't run the ANC, therefore we can't run the country. We can.
What was the expectation, to get the money after Christmas shopping is done?
Well, it's not my problem because payday is the 25th.
Well,
how many companies do that? On the 25th of November, we paid our people. They know that Christmas is coming. They know that the next payday is Christmas. So if they plead with us, pay us before Christmas, we can. But I always said to people, remember that the ANC is an NGO. It's not a commercial business. NGOs get their monies from donations. When people donate money to you, so they don't say, oh, well, we'll give you money before this day. And you can say to them, unless I have this money before this day, I threaten you. They'll give you money, but money come depending on their own situation. So we did get the money.
Yeah, I'm flabbergasted by what you are saying, to be honest. You say it's not my problem. No. Yes, why it is your problem. Just give me a little bit of a chance so that we can have a little bit of a dialogue on this. It's not legally your problem, but it's interesting because there's an analogy between the concept of a caring state, which I'm sure is the kind of state you want to sell to my listeners, and a caring employer. A caring employer preemptively says to its workers, obviously, this month, payroll will come through before the 25th. And if you say it's not my problem, I think you sum up the attitude of the ANC right there.
No. People must know if your payday is the 25th, it's the 25th. If you go to an employer and say, please pay me earlier, the employer says, I can't do that. Or yes, I'll try, but if I can't, I'll pay you on your normal payday. You must understand that. And it's not the first time. I don't know why they blow this out of proportion. There have been times where the general manager will write to the staff and say, look, the 25th is it's a Saturday. Would ideally pay you Friday, but...
But Paul, there's Christmas only in 1 month of the year. I mean, come on, let's not play games here. It's not like there's Christmas every month. December is unique in every single company. The majority of companies, even the ones that don't like their employees, make sure that at least with Christmas, you make sure that your staff members get paid before Christmas. You know that that's the most important family time for your staff members. When you say it's not my problem, you sum up everything that's wrong with the attitude of the organization.
No, it's not my problem. People know they end on the 25th. If we can pay them earlier, we can. But if donors transfer money a bit later, what must I do? Go and steal money from some bank?
If donors transfer money, what do you mean? Where does the money come from to pay them? Are you saying that was the holdup?
I said we get money from donations. We don't keep surplus of cash at the Luthuli House. So what I'm saying that if donors have not transferred money on time to pay people on the 22, eight days before Christmas,
yeah.
I can't pay them.
That's fair, yeah. That's fair. So tell me then. I totally get you. Yeah, that makes sense. So yes. Where does the income come from to pay the salaries?
We get money from donors. We get money from membership fees.
Who are these donors?
Our public. No, we don't want to disclose our donors for now. Until there's a law that says we should do so.
Why is that? Is transparency not for everyone?
No, it will come with time. But for now, a lot of donors don't want to be disclosed, so we must respect that.
So the donors didn't give you that money in time. That's why you couldn't be a caring employer this past December.
I've already said it's not the first time that we don't pay people exactly on the 25th,
yeah.
Even if it's not a holiday. And we explain to them and they understand.
Is that the policy in their contracts? You make it clear to them, December, you don't get paid before the 25th. What is the policy on December payment?
No, remember, there's nothing in their contract that on December they'll end before the 25th.
Mm-hmm.
We do it if we can.
Okay.
There's nothing in the contract. That's why I'm saying it's not my problem because it's not in the contract.
Yo. I'm glad I don't work for you, Paul. My goodness. Let's move on to a different topic.
People don't want to work for the ANC. They don't have to come.
No, I understand that. But here's the thing, Paul, but I don't want to flog a dead horse. Everything you say is legally acceptable, but there's law and then there's morality. From a legal point of view, everything you say is fine. But ethically speaking, you sound callous as hell.
No, I'm not. Ask the people at Luthuli House since I've been treasurer who has never been paid in the last 2 years. None.
Let's move on to a different conversation. We only have 3 minutes left. Do you have faith in President Cyril Ramaphosa in terms of how he's doing his job as president of the country?
Yes, absolutely. I think he's built the foundations for us to be able to turn things around. He's focused on unity. He's focused on transformation of SOEs. In fact, this Friday, the NEC will spend a lot of time talking about SOEs and changing them around. So, no, I'm happy that what we need to do now is to move a bit faster. But the foundation is in place, and we know what to do. And he has signed performance agreement with all the ministers. If the people don't do their work, he'll take action. So we are fine. I think we just need to push faster to turn the economy around, create employment, especially for young people.
There have been calls for Pravin Gordhan to either be sacked or move to a different ministry. More broadly, some commentators are suggesting maybe it's time for a cabinet reshuffle. Is it time for a cabinet reshuffle? What is your take on that conversation playing out in the country?
I think cabinet reshuffle should not focus on one or two individuals. I think it must be a basis of a proper assessment by the president to look at which ministry and minister is doing well. Which one is not, and where can we shift people around. I think if we just focus on Pravin because Kosati has made the call or somebody's irritated by him, I think we'll miss the point. I think we must allow the president to do a thorough assessment of the performance of government and look at the capacity of the state properly. And then he will take a decision that I think this minister would be better here and this one better here. But I would also say that I don't think we should chop and change government all the time. It creates instability.
And what specifically do you think of the performance of Minister Pravin Gordhan? Some people say Eskom falling under him politically currently means that he is the one where the buck stops with and that, quite frankly, that he is the one that should fall on his sword for not taking care of Eskom. Do you share that view, or do you share a different view that other people are giving that says that the problems at Eskom are too complex to blame Pravin Gordhan? What specifically is your view on Pravin Gordhan's performance in relation to Eskom and the energy crisis?
I think the problem of Eskom is systemic and I think stems from many years of mistakes of planning. Any other person can easily fail there, even if it's not Pravin. Because I'll tell you what, when we came into power in 1994, we took a decision under the presidency of Nelson Mandela that electricity must be rolled out to all our people, including rural areas and so on. So we started that program. But you recall that that program was not immediately accompanied by building of new power stations. So you have these few power stations, but some of them now are 30, 40 years old. So you can see where the problem comes from. More people, more than 90% of our people now have electricity. But at the same time, there are no new power stations. So whatever minister wants to do, if you don't have new power station, you don't have enough energy. You close this one to fix it. You want to maintain this one, so you have to close it down. You have reduced capacity. So we need to look
So just to summarize there, because we're going to run out of time, those who blame Pravin Gordhan, would you agree that they're missing the point about the systemic complexities and asking for his head to roll is completely to misunderstand the nature of the crisis? Is that a view that you hold?
Yes, you can move a new person there and that person will fail. So what do? You keep changing ministers like we did in some of the ministries. We changed ministers 7 times. Deal with the problem.
Paul, thank you so much for your time. I know Mondays are a busy day for you every week, and I really appreciate you coming on my show.
Yeah, thank you very much, sir.
Cheers. Paul Mashatile, ANC Treasurer General. Or should I say, Paul, I don't care, Mashatile. 28 minutes before 11 o'clock. Politicians being callous, and that's typical of